A very good day to you all, and welcome back to Mocca's Eye on La Liga podcast, as once again we wade through the murky depths of all things Spanish football and dig out the best talking points and stories to break down and discuss with some of Mocca's finest footballing minds. Today on the show, Simon Harrison and Ewan McTeer join me a little later, but at first we'll kick off things, all things El Clasico, of course, from over the weekend in that magnificent 3-2 win for Barcelona that sends the La Liga title race once again twisting and turning to perhaps another final day climax. We'll have to wait and see. A man who is watching all things El Clasico, though, is the man who is our special guest on the show today. One of the finest footballing minds from around the world in terms of his Spanish football. He's the host of All Things La Liga on Sky Sports in the United Kingdom. He is, of course, Mr. David Garrido joining us on the line. David, how are you doing today, mate? Pleasure to kick off the show with you today.
Well, I don't know about you, Ollie, but I found it very hard to sleep last night. I actually went to the gym as soon as I came off air because I was so buzzing with adrenaline. And I thought, well, I might as well put it to good use. And then I got home and I still couldn't sleep. such was the intensity of the game. I mean, you know, watching it in the studio, but I'm sure people watching it at home would have felt just exhausted by it, just utterly drained. What a spectacle. I think it exceeded all expectations, didn't it?
Well, I think everybody going into it seemed to think that Barca have got a shot, but most people were expecting Real Madrid to kind of get the job done. Is it just me thinking that? Or, I mean, that's the feeling I got from the podcast we did last week on Marca.com. And in general, just a lot of people thought this is an El Clasico that could be a thriller, but it's probably going to be Real Madrid wrapping up the title race.
Well, yes, I think you're right. The mood music before in the two camps was so different. And yes, of course, Real Madrid came in with the advantage and they would have, you know, ripped your arm off for the 2-2 when James scored that equaliser. I think what I felt most about this game was that if Barcelona were going to do anything this season, it absolutely had to all come together in one moment, in one 90 minutes. And sometimes you need the most adverse circumstances to make that happen. That's what Real Madrid have pretty much built their reputation on, you know, this season, going down 2-0 at Villarreal, coming back to win 3-2, 2-1 down against Deportivo at home, coming back to win 3-2. It's almost like they need that sort of delicious danger to be able to perform. and Barcelona sort of proved exactly the same thing. And I mean, all of the build-up dominated by the Neymar suspension and how going out of Europe and not scoring in 3 out of 4 games had really sort of ripped the soul out of this side. They looked broken. But, you know, it just goes to prove. And in the end, well, Luis Enrique was right. He did say that it's the perfect time to play a Clasico after going out of Europe. And believe it or not, before this, they played a Clasico after going out of Europe 7 times and they'd won once. That was just, for me, you know, brought it home how huge the achievement was and the magnitude of that performance, along with all the other things that we're going to discuss in terms of just the drama, the controversy, the incident, the intensity. But in the build-up to the game, sometimes the hype overrides the quality of the game. And thankfully, if anything, this time it was the other way round and the game over-delivered on what it's been billed as.
Let's get into kind of the tactical view of this, of when the teams were announced. Of course, there was going to be no Neymar for Barcelona and Gareth Bale coming back from injury, kind of relatively brought into the squad late in terms of getting back to full training, but in the starting 11 and Luis Enrique going with Alcacer and Suarez, with Messi just slightly off them perhaps in a deeper role with the three of Rakitic, Busquets and Iniesta behind them. There was plenty to look at when the team announcements came, but what did you make of Luis Enrique's idea of bringing in Paco Alcacer? Obviously he was the main man who was going to come in alongside perhaps Luis Suarez, but it was a big game for him to come in and try and make an impact. And obviously everybody's going to talk about Lionel Messi's impact on this, and Rakitic as well, obviously the goal scorers and the instigators. But Alcacer, I thought, came in and did a very good job considering the amount of pressure around him to take on Neymar's mantle in that side.
I think you're right, Ollie. I think it was a big call. I think it was ultimately the right call. He scored 4 in his last 8 games going into El Clasico, making his debut in El Clasico. And he'd only scored 1 in the previous 14. So he'd obviously sort of picked up something. It's taken him an awful long time to settle in at the Camp Nou. But then, of course, it's going to. And I think that it was the right stage, the right time. And ultimately, as well, Luis Enrique was shorn of options. Arda Turan wasn't really fit. I think he would have been, had he been fit, the most natural person to take up that left side of the three role where Neymar would have played. But Paco Alcácer was tireless and so unselfish and worked for the team. It's like he understood his role almost better than anyone else on that pitch. And Thierry Henry on our coverage last night described it very, very well, that when defending, Barca sat in a 4-4-2, two very solid banks of four, and Messi off Suarez, if you like. But then, with the ball, that formation would change. The fullbacks would push up, so you'd have Jordi Alba on the left and Sergio Roberto on the right. You'd have a diamond in midfield with Messi at the tip. But then Alcácer would have to move up front with Suarez to form a front two. Now, that constant movement, and given that actually in the opening period of the game, there was quite a lot of, you know, misplaced passes and possession lost. You know, the actual ability to adapt and understand his role there was, for me, really, really impressive for a man who's never played in this derby before. And not only that, his movement for Messi's equaliser, the 1-1 goal. I mean, there was a lot of great movement with the ball, but the best movement for me was the movement off the ball. Suarez and Alcácer particularly taking defenders away, allowing Messi that little bit of space, which of course he's going to pounce on, of course he's going to use, and ultimately then score the goal. I thought Alcácer was absolutely superb, and especially in the first half as well.
In terms of the other side of the game, then tactically, a lot is going to be said about Zinedine Zidane and perhaps where he got things wrong. Touched on Bale just a moment ago in terms of, did he come back too early? Was it right to leave someone like Isco on the bench? James Rodriguez, of course, made an impact coming off. Is he too reliant on wanting the BBC to be the front three for Real Madrid at all times, like Barca have Messi, Suarez and Neymar? I mean, Zidane's going to be punished for a fair few decisions he made last night.
I think it was the wrong call for me, Gareth Bale. I can understand why, and we've discussed it at length on the La Liga coverage on Sky Sports this season, that Zinedine Zidane's job is a lot to do with managing energies and managing egos. And he has done that to a greater or lesser extent very well this season. There have been a couple of occasions. He took Ronaldo off against Las Palmas when they were only 2-1 up. They ended up drawing 2-2 in Gran Canaria. And there have been other occasions when he's got it right, when he tactically for the derby at the Vicente Calderon, when Real Madrid won 3-0 over there with the Ronaldo hat-trick. Absolutely perfect in terms of how he set up his team and how they executed the game plan that they've been working on in training. Last night, Bale, in the 35 minutes on the pitch, did not affect the game. And it was his injury once again that flared up. And it seems as if he's sort of been a little bit off colour. He started the season so well, but since the injury, and I think it's been the case with a number of the Real Madrid players, you could argue the same for Luka Modric, haven't been as effective since they've come back. Isco is a man on form, is a man who wants to prove a point. They still are discussing contracts. And he, of course, wants to make the most compelling argument possible. Absolutely ran the show against Sporting Gijon at El Molinón in the 3-2 win where they had to come from behind. And he, for me, absolutely started that game. And, of course, he didn't feature at all. But then talking about decisions, well, of course, Zinedine Zidane didn't bring on Morata, didn't bring on Isco, but brought on James. And that did work out. Well, sort of worked out, at least temporarily worked out. So, you know, it's very easy to judge from, you know, the studio or from watching it in your front room. And you can't possibly get all of them right. And remember that he is still a relatively junior coach in terms of this being his first full season at any professional senior football team in the world. And yet it's Real Madrid. So I think you've got to kind of allow him a little bit there to still grow. But ultimately, on the decision about who starts this game, for me, and in fact, actually on marca.com, there was a poll done on who you would like to start the game, you know, in the whatever formation you like, whether it's 4-3-3 or 4-4-2 or a diamond or whatever. And the vast majority said Isco. And then even Marco Asensio was ahead of Gareth Bale. So that, I think, sort of tells its own story and how highly he's held in the regard of the Madridistas, but also just what sort of form he's in and the overall context of that situation as well, especially with the ongoing contract talks. So, yeah, unfortunately, in my book, at least for what it's worth, I think Zidane got that one wrong.
You're kind of kinder than a lot of the Spanish press and perhaps a lot of Real Madrid fans as well on Zidane. You know, it is his first full season in management, but when you're at Real Madrid, you win or go home. It's like being in the playoffs every single week in terms of football management. And Zidane did perhaps get a few things wrong last night. Wasn't helped, of course, by Sergio Ramos as well, who wasn't happy about his sending off. But I think for everybody watching that, kind of felt that was the right decision. A lunging challenge from Ramos, uncontrolled. And the words with Piqué after, as he was walking off, the chippiness between Piqué and Madrid as a city in general, just boiling over at this point.
Yeah, and you know, that's a story that I think will develop over the coming weeks as well. I mean, we've seen this on Twitter this season. Piqué particularly complaining about refereeing decisions, the 8 points that he believes there's been a swing from Barcelona to Real Madrid over decisions, particularly against Malaga, particularly against Villarreal. And then the three suspension dots after Ronaldo's offside goal, the first of his offside goals, of course, there were two. And it's been the sort of thing that Piqué hasn't been able to resist. He bit back in the mix zone after that, saying, well, actually, you know, if he looks back at the PSG game, rewind that and have a look and see how many suspension dots you want to put there. It's been just niggly. They don't get on. I think there is respect there. But of course, you know, it's massively coloured by the nature of their club rivalry. And I think it did just ultimately get to Ramos. It was at that state of the game where it was really starting to open up. Messi had recovered from his, you know, knocking the mouse from Marcelo, which I was surprised wasn't punished more. We discussed it in the studio, and I personally thought that it looked a little bit more deliberate than perhaps everyone else thought it was. And he, you know, Guillaume said that he was protecting himself. I don't know. I didn't expect his elbow to need to be that high to protect himself. But nevertheless, Messi shook that off and was really starting to exert his influence in the game. And it's one of the things that Zidane said afterwards in the post-match news conference, which was that they couldn't control Messi. And certainly one way you're not going to control him is by siding him down. And Ramos has now got more red cards than goals in Clasicos. So he'd actually levelled it up at four apiece after his equaliser at the Camp Nou earlier in the season, and now five red cards to his four goals. He is what he is. He's all or nothing, isn't he, Sergio Ramos? But that's another element, another ingredient that makes this such an enthralling encounter to discuss. And in terms of Real Madrid and where it leaves them now, my goodness, Pepe out, Varane out, both injured. Nacho is the only one. And remember that he has played, what is it now, 390 minutes in the space of four games, including the extra time against Bayern Munich. So Casemiro to play centre-back. Okay, so then who replaces Casemiro? Kovacic? Suddenly the words square pegs and round holes immediately spring to mind. And this is why it's not just a Clasico, it's not just a defeat. It's the utter change in momentum in so many ways that means that, you know, the last five match days of the season are must watch.
Massive to go into the final few weeks of the season. I think both you and I, David, I mean, we spoke very briefly off air before coming on and talking about this. It was a phenomenal night of football. I know you're a very busy man, so I'll try and wrap this all up in one big thing for you to kind of reel off into, I guess, in terms of the fittingness of the baited beast that was Barcelona and Lionel Messi going into this, and on the night Messi comes up with the last touch of the game pretty much and tucks it away. Two lost teeth, but 3 points gained for Barca, I think, is the headline I'd have liked to have seen somewhere. And then going into, suddenly now we're looking at games where you can see in the schedule where Real Madrid could stumble and Barca are right back in this title race despite Madrid having the extra game in hand.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was one of those things that I was considering before. In fact, we discussed it with Guy Scamendieta the previous match day and said, well, actually, if Barcelona do win the Clásico, then the pressure absolutely shifts massively back onto Madrid because of the nature of the games that they've got coming up. For me, the passage of games, particularly with Valencia at home, then the two Champions League semi-final legs, they have a game in between them, and then Sevilla at home. Now, it's not like they're just playing teams who have nothing to fight for. I mean, Valencia perhaps are safe and they are clear, but they're still a huge team, and that rivalry isn't to be underestimated as well. And of course, they wanted them to stay early this season. Sevilla, we know what they can produce, even when the chips are down. Well, Barcelona did the same. So I think that is such a crucial sequence of games, And to be able to pick themselves up from this and try and find some leadership somewhere in that dressing room to take them through this, and for Zidane to reassert his authority and show his squad that he can lead them through this period of real uncertainty, that for me is what's going to be perhaps the decisive factor here. And on the sort of the you couldn't write the script version, the element of the game last night at the Bernabeu. Well, one of the things that I was told before I took on the job presenting Spanish football on Sky Sports was there's one challenge above all else here. Of course, there are many challenges presenting Spanish football, but trying to find words to describe Lionel Messi is one of them. Just simply what superlatives you use, you're going to run out of them. It is quite simple. And I've seen it so many times this season, the moments of nerve against Leganés and Valencia, the moments of utter skill, the way he dominated the Catalan derby at the Camp Nou before Christmas, the utter impact he has, especially late on. But I think it all came perfectly into one place for Lionel Messi last night. I mean, you simply couldn't write it. To score a decisive goal deep in injury time at Bernabeu to bring the title race back into focus for Barcelona, where it hadn't really been, and to bring up your 500th goal. I mean, just absolutely extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary. And I think the thing is that even if he knew that that was on the cards, and, as Sergio Roberto moved up the pitch and slid the ball into Andre Gomez, Jordi Alba, he still has the coolness, the utter ice coolness to be able to deliver at that moment. We see it week on, week out, but I think last night reached a new level for just how great this player is, because it's a word that we use all the time, isn't it? It's like saying world class, Ollie. It seems like we can apply that to anyone. But actually, I think what we witnessed last night was greatness, was world class. And I defy any person to dispute that with me right now, because I think it was just utterly extraordinary. And I almost did fail to describe it. I think I took such a huge pause. I was wondering whether anything was going to come out of my mouth. But we got off air, so it was all right in the end.
Ever the professional right until the last. And that Messi holding up the number 10 shirt will be iconic in the minds of the Madrid fans, I'm sure, for a long time if Barca come back and win the La Liga title race. And the only thing that I think could beat it would be if George Hirst scored the winner at Wembley in the playoff final for Sheffield Wednesday. Am I right, David? I mean, that's the only thing that would beat it, surely.
Yes, I mean, look, talking about stories and scripts being written, Hirst, son of David, Wednesday legend, scoring in the playoff final to guarantee a return to the Premier League. I think we'd both be on the floor, wouldn't we, Ollie? I'm not sure how we would cope with that. I mean, I was practically falling off my chair last night. That would, I think, just top me off. But let's look, we've jinxed it now. It's not going to happen, you realise. We've said that. But that said, Thierry Henry did say before kickoff, Messi's going to get his 500th at the Bernabeu. And he did say, and I think it's a true point, the rivalry between him and Ronaldo elevates them both. They both benefit from that, of course. And he would have been motivated by Ronaldo scoring his 100th Champions League goal against Bayern Munich. And, he chose the perfect way to upstage it. So, perfect end for Barcelona.
We're very lucky men to be working in this industry at this time with two phenomenal players and this rivalry between two teams as well as it is. David, thank you so much for joining us. We'll let you get back to everything that's going on at Sky Sports around you today. And always
absolute
appreciate
pleasure,
the time.
Ollie, thank you.
Cheers, David. Thanks very much. Big thanks there to David Garrido for joining us on the show today. Always good to get a different view, different perspective on things. And David, obviously, a big fan of his Spanish football, hosting Sky Sports' coverage here in the UK. But it's time to get the big men, the real important guests on the show today. Two of the finest minds that Marca have to offer, as always. First, he's a man that's more involved in Eibar than anywhere else, but he can always spread his wings and cast some, I guess, open-minded views about the rest of La Liga. Ewan McTeer joining us on the show. Ewan, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, really good. I'm looking forward to this Basque Clásico between Eibar and Athletic. I think that's what we're all looking forward to this weekend.
that's what 90% of the talk has been about around the Marca offices, I'm sure, coming into this set of fixtures. El Clásico can take a back seat. It's all about this Monday night game coming up. Joining us as well on the show today, Simon Harrison, another one of Marca's fine writers on marca.com/EN. Simon, how you doing, mate? Pleasure to chat, as always.
Yeah, I'm doing really well. Out in Spain again, so, can't really complain, especially when there's so much good football to match the good weather.
T- tell me just how well you're doing. Come on, rub the salt into these open wounds of how finely poised you are recording this podcast.
Well, if the recording suddenly goes dead, it's probably down to my my laptop overheating from too much sun. So just bear that in mind.
The heart bleeds. The heart surely bleeds for the problems that you have. I'm pretty sure that there are some small nations around the globe that are going to be holding a rock concert just to try and raise some funds for you, Simon, after that. Let's dive into the talk about El Clasico then. It was, as we've already mentioned, one of the best El Clasicos that we've seen in a very long time. It was a game that didn't have the hype of Messi v Ronaldo, as we mentioned last week. It was a game that was all about the title race, and it was a game that could easily have not lived up to any sort of great standard. Such was the pressure on Barca going into it, it could have been a very cagey affair. In terms of particularly the final 25 minutes or so, just how open and end-to-end it was. Ewan, it was a game that blew us all away in terms of its quality and entertainment, which is very rare on these big occasions.
Yeah, it really seemed like the final 25 minutes, like you say, it really seemed like a cup final, and I guess for Barcelona it was, because they had to win. But the peculiar thing was that Real Madrid didn't really need to win. A draw would have been great for them, but they approached the final, the end of the game, once they got the equaliser and they had 5 minutes left to nurse that to full time, they approached the end of that game as if they too had to score a winning goal, and obviously that left them exposed at the back. And yeah, Barcelona, I mean, it was a brilliant move. It's hard to call it a counter-attack when there was so much build-up to it, but the fact that Real Madrid, I think when it started, they had six players in the Barcelona half. Yeah, they definitely overreached a little bit and let Barcelona in through the back door.
I mean, crushing for Madrid in terms of Lionel Messi, last kick of the game. You put it in a Hollywood script and you wouldn't be able to say that would happen, particularly getting his 500th goal for Barcelona as well, as we've touched on already. In terms of Madrid's attitude, after James pulled them back level with an amazing bit of off-the-ball movement to create the space for him to be able to put the shot away. But were you surprised that Madrid were allowed it to be so open still and try to play such still attacking, aggressive football, Simon?
Yeah, it was definitely quite strange. It was, like Ewan mentioned, a draw would have been fantastic, and I was quite surprised that after that goal had gone in, the equaliser, that they didn't sort of, you know, take stock of what they had, sit back, maybe be a bit more reserved and let the likes of Asensio and James kind of do the bulk of the work in the opposition half. It was strange. I mean, there was strange game management in general, I think, from both sides of the coin. But Real Madrid, they'll be kicking themselves, because they, I think a point really wouldn't have changed all that much in the title race, and now it's been blown wide open, and I don't think you can really underestimate the sort of the boost that it will give Barcelona mentally, and especially the fact that they don't have the same sort of European commitments anymore after being knocked out by Juventus. It's really just left the back door open on the night, as Ewan said, and it's left the back door open for them to, you know, just steal the title, which has for so long seemed to be Real Madrid's to lose. Tonight, I mean, last night, they might have just done that.
In terms of, before we get into the implications of this in the title race and the fixtures coming up later on down the line for both these two sides, and of course Real Madrid do have that UEFA Champions League semi-final now to contend with against Atletico, which puts a little bit more pressure on them too. But in terms of, just as you were watching the game, not just as football fans, as football journalists, as football experts in your own right, where did you start in trying to kind of break down exactly what happened and reviewing this game, if you will? I'll start with you, Ewan. Just, it seemed like there was so much going on. What were the key pivotal moments that stood out for you in this one? The sending off, the opening goal, the refereeing decisions in general throughout the game. There's so much controversy and elements to talk about.
Yeah, I think the thing with the Clásico is you can almost risk overanalyzing it. And at the end of most Clásicos, I mean, most of them are won by one goal, maybe a couple are the, you know, exceptional performances that one of them put together every now and then. But most of the time it comes down to one goal, and it is kind of a toss-up. You know, there's so much going on, there's so many tackles flying in from both teams, there's so much play from both sides, that one, you know, shot goes one inch, one direction, and the whole game, a whole league title can be turned. And I think the fact that this was you know, in the Bernabeu. The fact that home advantage really played no part at all, and it hasn't done for the last couple of years. It's the last time the home team won a Clásico was more than 2 years ago now, and it's almost just a mishmash of fantastic football, some wild challenges, some hot headedness, and at the end of the day, someone comes out on top. And this sort of had that feel. I mean, Barcelona won the game, but they didn't particularly control proceedings any more than Real Madrid did. And at the end of the day, it did come down to Messi taking one of his chances, whereas Real Madrid couldn't take theirs. And they had more chances when you look at it. The shot count, I think, was 14 on target for Real Madrid to 9 to Barcelona, which is just incredible, by the way, to have 23 shots on target in one football match. But Real Madrid had more shots. It just came down to the fact that Barcelona were able to take three of theirs and Real Madrid could only take two. But it could very easily have been a draw. It could very easily have been a Real Madrid win. It was just all a bit haphazard from start to finish from both teams.
Simon, what about your kind of general breakdown and analysis of this in terms of the turning points and the things that stood out for you in terms of the battles on the pitch between individuals, between the two managers as well, tactically, how they approached this? What seemed to be the pivotal moments that really impacted and affected the game the most over the 90 minutes?
Yeah, I think it's quite a strange one, because normally you'd sort of point to the red card being what changed the game, and Real Madrid, I mean, Danny Carvajal said as much after the game. But you look at the fact that James then got them back into it, equalised, and then you're thinking, well, really, did it have such a huge impact? They still managed to rally again, they still managed to fight back. It is quite hard to pinpoint anything particular. I mean, I think that Real Madrid really will rue the fact that for the first 20 minutes or so, they really came out with a lot of intensity. I think Zidane was probably thinking that there have been some games this season where they've not quite come out fighting, as it were. And they really seem to make a conscious effort to really go out, press quite high. Benzema, Ronaldo and Bale, they were all interchanging quite a bit. They were giving Barcelona a lot to think about. But somehow Barcelona managed to kind of weather that mini storm at the start of the game, and once they started to have a couple of little spells of possession where they might have felt as though they're in control for those little tiny periods where they had the ball, I really do think that Real Madrid could have maybe grabbed one, possibly even two, like early goals. I mean, the penalty decision, that could have been a huge turning point had it been given. There was obviously contact from Umtiti on Ronaldo. It would have been quite a soft one, but I mean, Umtiti did lunge out, didn't get any of the ball, and caught a bit of the man. You could also possibly look at the fact that even before a ball was kicked, with Zidane choosing to go with Bale, I mean, I thought that was quite strange. It kind of almost wasted substitution, and Bale just didn't quite look at the races. I think maybe if you had a player that was a bit sharper, a bit fitter, even from the start of the game, Bale got into a couple of positions where maybe a player that was that little bit more match ready might have actually tucked one home. I don't know. I think the easy answer would be to say that the Ramos red card, which by the way definitely was a red card, and anyone who says different is crazy. I don't know how after the game there was any controversy about it whatsoever, and I don't know why he made such a big fuss when actually leaving the pitch. But yeah, I would say it's quite hard. I mean, I think if you're a Real Madrid fan, you might look at the penalty. Should it have been given? Should it have not, with Umtiti? But for the rest of the footballing world, I think they'd probably look at that crazy little moment of rashness from Sergio Ramos.
And you've actually written on Marca.com an article saying that the loss of the, I guess, the lead in the title race as it stands at the moment, with Barca on top just by goal difference, isn't, and the loss obviously on the weekend against Barca, isn't the biggest loss that they'll actually face. And it's that Ramos loss now as we go into the final five games of the season, plus the Champions League ties against Atletico for Real Madrid. Ramos's loss, considering it's a very much depleted spine of the defence for Real Madrid at the moment, that's going to be huge in these final few games of the season. When you think about, they've got to play Sevilla and Valencia, a side that can be so hot and cold under the last few kind of months of the season, particularly under Varro. And in general, there aren't many games that you look at Madrid without two decent centre-backs where you think they've got this one completely in the bag.
Yeah, it's definitely a really tough decision that Zidane's got on his plate for the next game that they play. Rafael Varane, he's still a big doubt for the next game, and I think Zidane might have learned his lesson with putting Bale in at the deep end in terms of risking players who might not be that fit, especially given that Varane, when he came back from his first hamstring problem this season, it didn't take too long for him to feel that something wasn't right and then be taken straight off again, and he's been out since. So it's tough because you look at Real Madrid and you think that they've got exceptional squad depth, but with Pepe being injured and Varane being injured, Nacho is already that you know, extra option who wouldn't normally be called upon. I think he's done quite well considering everything that's been going on and the high pressure that he's been under, but you can't really look at any other player in Real Madrid's squad and think that they're a ready-made sort of replacement. I mean, that's definitely not the case, and you can't even really look at any of their players and think, well, maybe he can do a job. I don't think that Danny Carvajal or Marcelo or any fullback really is of the mould that might suit playing as a centre-back, and I think if you were to go and play Casemiro at centre-back, he'd probably be walking off for an early shower after about half an hour. So it is going to be really difficult, and they're going to some teams where they might not be the best at the back, but there are a lot of teams down, you know, in the sort of the mid-table obscurity and the bottom end of the table who still do have some dangerous players. So, I mean, yeah, I did write about the fact that it is a huge, huge factor. I was proved wrong with how they managed to defend well against Bayern Munich, albeit without Robert Lewandowski playing in the first leg. But I really have no idea who Nacho will be lining up at centre-back with come their next game in the league. I don't know if Ewan's got any ideas about whether, I don't know, they've got a player who might just be, you know, ready to come out of the shadows and do a job.
Yeah, well, like you say, I mean, Casemiro's a risky one because he was very close to getting a red card in the Clásico, and if you put him at centre-back, you're only going to risk that more. I think in the past two or three games, I mean, Casemiro has been, he's had maybe three yellow card challenges in each of the past three games he's played, and has picked up just one in each of them, so that would be a big risk. But I think when Ramos went off on Sunday night, it was Toni Kroos was the one to sort of drop in initially, and then Mateo Kovacic did a shift there as well. So I don't know if one of them could maybe step in. They both did okay, but it was only a 10-minute spell, but they sort of took turns of filling in and just sort of plugging that gap. But yeah, Zidane has a few days, I guess, to think about it, and we'll see, I guess. Like you say, if Iran isn't fully fit, will he really risk him again after it really backfired with Bale? I don't think he would.
Yeah, trip away against Deportivo La Coruña coming up on Wednesday night, and Depor, a side that probably just about out of that relegation battle, looking fairly safe, although there's still a possible threat in getting drawn back into it with Sporting Gijón get their act together. They'll still want to get at least a point, perhaps try and nick three against depleted Real Madrid. In terms of Luis Enrique, just quickly, Ewan, on this one, his reputation has been all over the place this season at Real Madrid, at Barcelona as a manager. How big is it for him to win his final El Clásico in the Bernabeu against Real Madrid in a game that they had to win, where he's finally seen tactically with his decision making to have risen to the occasion and managed to salvage Barcelona's title hopes? It's a huge deal, does it not feel, for his reputation and how he'll be perceived as he walks out of Barcelona?
I think it's really a case of that old thing where the manager gets the blame if the team's losing and the players take the credit if they're winning. I think that was really the case in this Clásico, because if Barcelona had lost this, that would have been another another stick to beat Luis Enrique with. But the fact they won it in such kind of just random fashion with they just really seemed to lack a plan, and the plan changed several times throughout the game, and that might have been Luis Enrique, I don't know. But I wouldn't necessarily say this was a tactical masterclass from Barcelona that led them to the win. I think this was just, you know, a fantastic goal from Rakitic and a little bit of Leo Messi on top just doing his thing. So Luis Enrique, obviously, you know, he did a lot of things behind the scenes that we won't ever know about, but I don't think this will really go down as the Clásico that he won, but importantly for him, it won't go down as a Clásico that he lost.
So you're saying this kind of almost pushes forth the rhetoric of Lionel Messi is Barcelona's kind of thing that they need to depend on, basically. Without him, they're nothing, and that enforces that slightly then with this result?
Not necessarily nothing, but I think without him, they wouldn't be a team that could have won this game and taken the league title all the way to the end. I think without Messi, who's been exceptional this season, I think that was 47 goals now. Without him, Barcelona just wouldn't be the top team that we've seen in recent years, because the supporting cast has maybe gotten a little bit weaker with a sort of weaker overall squad. I mean, he's got the MSN that he maybe didn't have in years gone by, but the midfield is a bit depleted, the defence isn't what it was, and yeah, Messi's, you know, just something extra special, but without him, we've seen Barcelona in games this season without him, and they have struggled.
Well, either way, it was an incredible night of football in the Bernabeu. When we come back after this very quick break, we're going to take a look at what's coming up then for Real Madrid in terms of the Champions League as well. They've got the draw against Atletico Madrid in the semi-finals. It's perhaps not the one that some people on this podcast wanted to see when we spoke about it last Thursday, but it's certainly going to be an entertaining two games. We'll talk about that when we come back here on Eye on La Liga.
Maximilian Morals, difference in opinion, I was with him. He had seven Jack and Cokes in him. They had platform heels, nose job bills. Some look like the with the fucked up grill. Supermodels on my D, 1, 2, 3. He said two for you, two for me. Face like a saint, sipping like a sinner. Cocaine makes you thinner, cocaine makes you thinner.
Welcome back to the show here on Marker's football podcast, Eye on La Liga. Joining me, Ollie Wilson, on the show, as always, two of Marker's finest minds, Simon Harrison and Ewan McTare. Of course, you can find Ewan on Twitter at E-M-C-T-E-A-R, as in E McTare, all one word, all lowercase on Twitter. And, of course, Simon Harrison, Simon H Football on Twitter as well, where you can get their musings and links to their articles on marker.com/EN. We've spoken about El Clasico. We've almost beaten it to death with a stick. But it's time to look at Real Madrid's future in Europe coming up as well. How pleased are Los Blancos going to be that they're facing a side that they know that they can take on and beat? But perhaps does a two-leg affair favour Atletico Madrid a little bit more? Simon, we'll kick things off with you on this one. In terms of the draw itself in the Champions League, Monaco taking on Juventus, Real Madrid taking on Atletico Madrid. How happy will the Madrid fans be to have two legs of a European derby?
It's definitely, I would say it's the toughest that they could have hoped for, and that's not to sort of to underestimate what Juventus are capable of. I think you'd look at Monaco and that would be the favourable draw for any of the other three teams that are in the semi-final stages. Obviously they are a dark horse, but you would look at the pedigree of the players and the fact that maybe the occasion could get to them. But it is nice the fact that there's going to be another huge game at Estadio Vicente Calderon before they move home. But I would say that Zidane probably isn't too pleased about playing against Atletico Madrid yet again. And this is an Atletico team which just keeps getting better. I think earlier in the season I was perhaps under the impression that Simeone would probably leave come the end of the campaign, and that maybe a few of their players, there might need to be a bit of a changing of the guard for them to, you know, sort of rejuvenate and be refreshed heading into the new season. But now they seem to be one of the more organised teams left in that competition. They've got the Simeone DNA, but rather than in the past where they've just got the two banks of four and they'll wear the game down, they've got a lot of talent available to them going forward. And Antoine Griezmann, I mean, I would easily say that he's probably the second best player in the world right now. He's playing unbelievably well. They'll be wondering how, especially with, you know, with Pepe and Varane having had injury problems, they'll be wondering how they can keep him quiet, because he's almost a law unto himself at the moment. And Atletico, it's not the team where they're dependent on corners and dependent on headed goals as it was in the past. They've got a lot more to offer in open play, and I think across the two legs it's going to be really, really tough. I think there was actually a poll on Marker which asked the fans what they would like, and I think that the Atletico were the least favourable one for Real Madrid fans, so it's an interesting one, definitely.
Ewan, do you think the two-leg affair, obviously we've seen Real Madrid get past Atletico Madrid in Champions League finals in two of the last three, and obviously lifting Ledesma in the 11th European title for the club, but do you think two legs actually favours Simeone's side slightly more? And obviously there's the opportunity for Atletico Madrid to put right the wrongs, if you will, of getting a last game at the Vicente Calderon against Real Madrid. I mean, the atmosphere for that leg is going to be phenomenal.
Yeah, I think the two-legged affair definitely gives Atletico Madrid a better chance than in a one-off final. And I think one of the facts, one of the aspects of this draw that's gone, that hasn't maybe been talked about enough, is the fact that second leg is at the Calderon. And I think that's going to be massive, because we've seen time and again, if Real Madrid have lost the first leg away from home, how many times have they brought it back at the Bernabeu? They almost even did that against Bayern, even though they'd had a good first leg. They sort of let Bayern back into it, and then were spurred on by the home crowd. And I think the fact that Real Madrid know they need to do something in the first leg, and if they have a poor first leg and they don't, if they go into the Calderon without a lead, I think that's going to be very, very difficult for them. We saw them win 3-0 there earlier in the league season, but I think we can sort of write that one off as a bit of an anomaly, and Atletico were in very poor form at that point. So yeah, to have this game, and it's going to be, like you say, the atmosphere is going to be incredible. It's going to be the last ever European game there, the second last game for Atletico ever. They play Athletic Club in the Liga a couple of weeks after that, but this is going to be quite an occasion. And if they can go to the Bernabeu and come away with a draw or even a one goal defeat, then you know it's perfectly poised for them. And in their last, I think it's their last 9 Champions League knockout ties at home, they have not conceded one single goal, which is just ridiculous. And even if you know, even if they give way a little bit and allow Real Madrid one goal, you still think they can put something together to win this tie. So yeah, the two-legged affair is going to make this an interesting one. And they always played two legs in the Champions League 2 seasons ago, but this time having the second leg at home, I think it's going to prove decisive.
I think it's just great for the city of Madrid as well, particularly losing such a great stadium like the Calderon, and having a chance to have a last derby in there, and particularly what potentially could be arguably the most important game between these two sides at the Calderon that there will be, if there's plenty on the line in that second leg going into it, and Atletico can try and push themselves through to yet another European final, or Madrid can do the same. I mean, it's wonderful for all eyes of European football to be drawn back on Madrid that night. And even though Barcelona haven't made the semi-finals, it means that we're going to have a standout semi-final clash between these two, even if it's not going to be taking place in the final in Cardiff come June. Gents, before we move away for today, because we've had plenty to talk about in terms of Los Blancos and Barcelona, I want to look a little further down the league and perhaps the Europa League race between Villarreal, Real Sociedad, and then how far down the list are we going in terms of teams that are still in the battle to try and topple the Sociedad and Real, Villarreal sat in 5th and 6th at the moment, with Bilbao taking on Eibar this Monday night. So we can't get too much into their, I guess, chances, if you will, before we know the result that will come out obviously at the end of that game this evening. But how far down the list are we going in terms of Eibar still in with a shout of European football? If Eibar are in it, are Espanyol still in it? And do Celta Vigo even have an outside chance, sat down in 10th at the moment, of being able to push into that top 6?
Yeah, I think you can still consider Eibar in it, given that they've got this game in hand at home to Athletic. Don't want to make too many predictions, because by the time everybody listens to this, whatever I predict won't have happened. But yeah, if Eibar can get a point or three in this one, then they're very much still in the race. But I think Espanyol, having lost Atletico last weekend, I think that was their big chance to stay in that battle. And I think that the fact they're down now in 49 points, I think that's a bit too much of a gap. And I think if Eibar were to lose to Athletic in this Monday night game, then I think their chances are probably gone as well. But if they can even get a draw and keep it going for the final 5 games of the season, then yeah, I think it's going to be any one of, you know, those 3 best teams there, and Villarreal, because they've been a bit inconsistent too.
But if you're giving Eibar the shout, could you not say that Espanyol still have that shout? Obviously they don't have the game in hand, and if Eibar lose, it's a little more tough for them if they fall to Bilbao this evening. But if you're going that far down the lead, there's only 1 point between Espanyol and Eibar as well.
True, but I think if Eibar were to lose to Athletic tonight, then I would say they'd be out of it as well, yeah.
Turning your back on your side, you're terrible.
No, I didn't say that they're going to lose, you know.
Yeah, no, ye of little faith at times. Don't worry, I'm a pessimist as well with any teams that I try.
I'm just a realistic Scot, you know. I've got used to not making optimistic footballing predictions over the years, ever since 1998, funnily enough.
98? Really? I mean, you were that optimistic going into France. We'll come back to that at a later date, I'm sure. Simon, what about yourself? I mean, which do you think are going to be the two teams most finally poised to be able to take these two Europa League spots? I mean, Villarreal all season have been defensively nigh on excellent, aside from Atletico Madrid, best defence in La Liga. It's just scoring goals that's been their trouble, really. But Sociedad haven't been that much better in front of goal and do tend to concede a fair bit. I mean, there's plenty open in terms of form and the running for these sides. In terms of consistency, it's hard to almost nail down which side is going to be able to string together maybe enough wins to ensure that it's a comfortable ride through, perhaps get 4 in 5 or something like that to finish off the campaign.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely count Espanyol kind of out of the race. I mean, just from watching with how they play and how they're set up, I don't really think they're really set to, you know, set the world alight in the last few games. They're quite reliant on their home form, and they've got to play both Barcelona and Valencia, which obviously with Valencia you never know which one's actually going to turn up. And then away from home they've got to go to El Molinón, which is never easy. They've got to go to Rey Azor, which is never easy. And well, they've got to play Granada, but obviously with Tony Adams in charge, it's the same applies for those. You're not really too sure what Adams will have cobbled together by the time it's the end of the season. I would say Villarreal, and I think Real Sociedad, they've got Willian Jose back scoring goals. They've got Juanmi is also scoring some goals. I think they've kind of picked up a little bit over the last couple of games. Eusebio has said that they found themselves again, and I think that's definitely true. They did lose to Barcelona in that 3-2 last week, but they played very, very well, and I think it was extremely harsh for them to come away with nothing. So I would definitely say it's between Villarreal, Real Sociedad, and then I would say that whatever happens between Athletic and Eibar probably will decide who's going to be the third favourite for that. But I mean, I could definitely see it finishing up how it currently is now, but maybe with Real Sociedad enjoying themselves a little bit more recently, they could take fifth place, but we'll have to see.
There's plenty of big games coming up this week in terms of that running, with Atletico Madrid taking on Villarreal on Tuesday, along with Gijón against Espanyol. And Gijón need to get victories in terms of trying to just force the issue and try and pull in Leganés once again into the relegation battle. Granada against Malaga as well wraps up Tuesday, and Wednesday Barcelona take on Osasuna. Should be a comfortable victory for Barca as they look to keep the pressure on Real Madrid, who take on Deportivo La Coruña on the road. Leganés against Las Palmas could be a difficult one for the home side, and Valencia against Real Sociedad, as mentioned there, Sociedad taking on a Valencia side that are so hit and miss and just impossible for any scout or tactician to be able to predict how they're going to perform. And then Friday night starts it all again, Villarreal against Sporting Gijón, Eibar against Athletic Club Bilbao is this Monday evening. Simon, Ewan, massive thanks to you both for taking time out to have a look back at El Clasico, and I'm sure it's a game that we'll all be happy to sit and watch once again on repeat and keep catching the highlights until the Tuesday night action begins. Simon, thank you so much as always, mate. Always appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. I've got to get back to the sun now, so I'll leave you with that.
I assume you're talking about the light in the sky and not the news.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Cheers. Cheers, Simon. Thanks very much for that. Simon H. Football on Twitter is where you can find him if you fancy sending any abuse at all while he lounges in the sun with the foil just evening out the tan. And Ewan as well. Always appreciate it, mate. Always a pleasure to chat with you about all things Spanish football.
No problem. Thanks for having me, as usual.
And there's no jealousy, I'm sure, from Ewan about Simon's son that he's getting at the moment. E. McTare is you can find on Twitter. E. McTare. You can find on Twitter, all lowercase, all one word, if you want to follow Ewan. We will be back probably on Thursday as we try and arrange some more guests and delights for you to delve into terms of the Spanish footballing news and action from the midweek games. Until then, get on to marca.com/EN, marca.com/EN, and Marca in English on Twitter. That's Marca in English on Twitter, all lowercase, all one word. We will be back at least next week, perhaps on Thursday. Until then, enjoy all of the midweek football and on the weekend as well. There's plenty still to fight for in La Liga, and the title race is right back on. Have a good one.